So in our lectionary readings, one of the other optional lectionary readings is from Jeremiah, and it happens to be one of my favorite images and verses in the Bible, so I'm going to use it. And I'd like to start by reading it, just a short section of it. God says through the prophet Jeremiah, "My people have committed two evils. They have forsaken me, the fountain of living water, and dug out cisterns for themselves, cracked cisterns that can hold no water." Evils that leave us thirsty and impoverished as we engage them. Imagine yourself thirsty, dry throat, dehydrated, standing in the hot California sun, really needing a drink of cool, clean water. And in that state, you turn away from the gushing, sparkling, pure waters of the fountain of life in front of you. You roll up your sleeves and you turn to dig in the dusty heat of the desert and build for yourself a cistern that, when it is finished, is found to be cracked, the water leaking out of it, leaving you thirsty, parched, and now exhausted. A desperate state. I wonder how you and I dig cisterns that crack and leave us thirsty. Jesus in the Gospel describes one way that this cistern building happens. So let's visit with him at the Pharisee's house for dinner. On an occasion, Jesus went to the house of a leader of the Pharisees to eat a meal on the Sabbath. Jesus, the fountain of life incarnate, really made a point of eating with people whenever he could, going to the homes of Pharisees, friends, tax collectors, whoever it seems would have him. And many of the stories we hear in the Gospels are remembrances of incidents that happened when Jesus came over for dinner. I often wonder what it felt like to welcome Jesus into your home. Probably a little alarming, because you never knew what he would do. Would he heal someone? Offend the politician you'd invited over to impress, say something so profound it made you want to weep, interact with a known loose woman? Jesus, you never know what you're going to get, but if you're open to inviting him in, you are definitely in for a wild ride and maybe a big gulp of fresh living water. They were watching him closely. When Jesus was present, everyone was scrutinizing, watching, waiting for a slip-up or a miracle or a moment. When he, Jesus, noticed how the guests chose the places of honor. They weren't the only ones watching carefully. Jesus was also watching them, observing the jostling and jockeying for a place of honor at the table. Who is noticing who? Who's sitting with who? Who's talking to who? Who's in and who's out? Have you ever had that experience of going to a wedding reception, looking for your name on the seating plan, looking, finding yourself at a table that's almost in the kitchen, the happy couple mere specks on the horizon? People jostle for position and for honor in our society too. At work, the relentless drive to impress the boss, to talk to influencers, to not be left out and appear excellent. At social gatherings, you dress to impress. You talk to the cool folk. You don't want to be left out of the room where it's all happening. In church, even, we make sure the rector sees us on the way out and that we talk knowledgeably in small group about the sermon and we serve earnestly. On Facebook or Instagram, we keep posting meaningful things. We don't post boring things. And we check to see how those meaningful things that we posted are being received. We all like to be loved, to be honored. Of course we do. Why? What's behind that desire? We dig cisterns for ourselves, cracked cisterns that don't hold water. Deep inside each of us is a natural, God-given longing to be loved, to be honored, to be cherished. That longing, that thirst, needs to be quenched by something. Well, Jesus notices that thirst, that striving for the seat of honor, our frantic cistern digging. And he wants to upend the jostling hierarchy, free us from the need to be part of that pressurized system, and quench our thirst for recognition with water that will truly refresh. I wonder what it would be like to be truly free from comparing ourselves to one another. Jesus told them a parable. When you are invited by someone to a wedding banquet, don't sit down at the place of honor, but rather take the lower seat. What is he saying in this parable? Well, first of all, just some practical good advice. Avoid being embarrassed at a dinner party and don't seat yourself at the top of the table. It's not your place to seat yourself. What does this look like for you and I, this sitting oneself at the top of the table? How do we position ourselves for honor? Now, I'm sure most of us are pretty subtle about it because most of us here are nice people and we don't want to appear prideful or self-centered, which is, of course, the point, not wanting to appear prideful or self-centered. We're all so entangled with our own performance and image that our lives are driven in an attempt to manage that. As a child, I excelled academically. I loved school. I even loved exams. And I worked hard, and I rarely scored below an A. I studied hard, and I eventually ended up going to take a course in mathematics at Cambridge as an undergraduate. Yes, it really is true that what you think you're going to do when you're 18 is often nothing like where you end up. You know, there's a high that came for me with success, and that high was addictive and dangerous because you keep having to up the stakes to keep the high. Success is great, but if you don't surpass yourself and keep climbing to greater heights, that buzz wears off. My first year at college was a lot about learning, but not necessarily about learning math. It was more about learning to be an adult, meeting my now husband, learning to navigate the temptations that were now for the first time within my reach, having previously only been told stories about them by my parents in an attempt to scare me off. And because of all this life learning that I did, my math took a back seat. And I ended the year with the equivalent of a low B. Now I realize for some of you that this is not really the disaster it seemed to me at the time. But for someone used to success, I felt like my foundation was crumbling. If I wasn't near the top, who was I? If I couldn't take a good report card home, I was facing the disappointment and anxiety and anger of my parents, which indeed I did. If I wasn't brilliant, who would secure my future? And you know, I really, really resented the majority of my classmates and friends who were now seated further up the table than I was. So I had dug a pretty impressive cistern for myself, but it was cracking badly and leaking water fast. Now I recovered, but I have to say the specter of being brilliant in order to be okay stalks me still. As I take on more responsibility at work, and as I navigate my own children's school and other progress or lack thereof. What if we didn't try to appear good or important? What if there were more life-giving ways to find significance and honor? And if there are, how do you even start to move towards them? Well, Jesus has an idea. Seat yourself with the lowly in the lowest place. Intentionally get up, walk towards the end of the table, and sit yourself down there. a physical action that involves turning and movement. Jesus is suggesting that you and I let go of this competitive drivenness to be recognized, this self-justification and relentless need to justify and prove ourselves. It's an invitation to freedom, to stop digging a cracked cistern and turn towards the fountain of life. Simultaneously, it's a movement towards the lowest, because when you sit yourself at the end of the table, you find yourself sitting down with others who are at the end of the table. So go to the place of lowness. Be with those who are low, because there you will be free to enjoy the gushing waters of the fountain of life. Now, you know I have to talk about the jail at this point, right? And the writer of Hebrews really beautifully gives me an obvious on-ramp. Remember those who are in prison as though you were in prison with them. The writer of Hebrews seems to suggest an emphasis on the stranger, the inmate, the tortured, the oppressed, asking us to associate ourselves fully with these people. Not serve them or help them or teach them, but identify ourselves with them, which can and is transformative. Because as we enter into places of lowness where people are suffering, we move towards angels in disguise and away from the rat race of worldly competitiveness. Just this week, I'd spent days on administration and new management and insurance and budget, and I was wondering, why did I take the job I took? So I went to visit an elderly man, an inmate, let's call him Jose, who's been in jail for 3.5 years. He's over 70. He's been in the St. Mark's writing group since it started, but he got moved out to a different unit, so he misses us. And he was thinking that maybe we'd forget about him. So I went to visit him. In jail, since he moved from the dorm we've been in, he got an eye infection and has completely lost his vision in one eye. He's fighting his case by himself because he doesn't trust attorneys. And he's stuck in seemingly endless court arguments. He's scared to be in jail for the rest of his life. He's scared to get out of jail because he has nowhere to go. What would a 70-year-old half-blind man do on the streets of San Jose? And when I went, all he wanted to do was chat with someone who's friendly. So we chatted for about 30 minutes. And as I got up to leave him, I told him, "Jose, it's always so good to see you. You make my day so much better." And he smiled, and he asked, "Really?" And he took my hand to shake it goodbye, and then he took my hand in both of his hands, and he put his forehead down on the table, and he wept. My heart was filled. My focus was restored. A full gulp of fresh, flowing, living water. Back to Jesus and his scintillating dinner party conversation. Because in case his guests had not got the point yet, he underlines it with another story. He said to the one who invited him for dinner, "When you give a lunch or a dinner, do not invite your friends or brothers or relatives or rich neighbors. Invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind." Well, that's awkward. At a dinner party full of friends, neighbors, and rich people, Jesus says, when you have a dinner party, don't invite friends, neighbors, and rich people. Don't dig cracked cisterns. Invite the discarded of life, the beggars, the poor, the inmates, those who cannot possibly give you anything in return. Turn to the fountain of life. For Jesus's invitation is an invitation to be free from a tit-for-tat living, from a doing in order to get something, for relationships based on loss-profit calculations. And it's an invitation to relationships that flow from knowing that you and I and Jose and all the people we run into every day are beloved children of God, made in his image, and because of that, each one of us eternally deserves unending love, respect, and honor. And our repayment for connecting with these hidden angels is to be reassured of the presence of God, the fountain of life. As Hebrews tells us, we can say with confidence, the Lord is my helper. I will not be afraid, for what can anyone do to me? Finally, free of dependence on anyone, any human approval, and in turn, a deep abiding conviction of God's loving presence. In a moment, we're going to hear the song, Fount of Every Blessing. I think God was planning our service for us. And as we listen to that, and soon move to celebrate the Eucharist together, which is, I believe, the ultimate moving of God from the highest point of honor to the place of lowness on the cross, and the emergence from that of the sparkling resurrection fountain of life, as we celebrate the Eucharist, maybe you can see the walking up to receive the bread and the wine as a walking from your cracked cistern of striving towards a commitment to be with the lowly where Jesus is. And for a moment, ask yourself, how might I be digging a cracked cistern in my life? And how can I intentionally move towards the bottom of the table, where I will find every thirst quenched? Amen.